As I've, through the last couple of weeks, I don't know exactly how long, but there's been a number, with all the news that's gone on, a number of thoughts that have come to me as in preparation for today, and I'm kind of, seems like they've all kind of pulled together in some thoughts that I want to share with us this morning. Because it kind of culminated when I thought about 4th of July and what that meant, and Independence Day, and as I thought about that and the storybook version of our beginnings that really romances the discovery of America, telling the tale of pilgrims coming to America on the Mayflower in search of religious freedom, and of others that followed, such as the Puritans and Quakers, and creating America, which often you hear was founded on freedom of religion. But that idealistic view really denies reality, as most of us probably know. And for most people, freedom of religion meant freedom of my religion at the exclusion of all other religions. And the established, for example, the established religion of New England was the Puritans, and there was no religious freedom. And in fact, in Boston, four Quakers were hanged for defying Puritan law of banning Quakers. So rather than our cherished ideal of being founded on freedom, America actually has a tarnished past. We were founded on violence, oppression, and war, all of which raise their heads today. And I think this is where the juxtaposition of what I've heard in the news conflicted with the 4th of July celebrations that happened, particularly yesterday. Initially, we fantasized that we were settling unsettled country and coming to America in discovery. In fact, I discovered as I did research that there was a whole movement of discovery, a whole theology, so to speak, in which European countries said where there isn't a Christian, an overtly Christian people running the government, we must go there and take over and settle it. And, you know, that's pretty sad. But that was the prevailing theology, clearly behind Columbus and others. And we didn't honor those whom we displaced. And while we tell stories of early settlers, the natives tell stories of violation. Columbus Day, Thanksgiving, and 4th of July are all painful reminders to them of our aggression and what we have done in shoving them aside. Not only did we violate the natives that lived here for centuries before us, we took their land. And we methodically and violently shoved them as Native Americans onto reservations and killed many in the process. Some react and say, but they killed us. And I say, what would you do if someone came in and took over your land and displaced you and moved into your territory? How would you react? In addition, we participated in the slave trade, treating people as commodities to be owned, systematically kidnapping Africans and bringing them to America to be slaves, kidnapping people in other countries and bringing them here and enslaving them, treating them no better than cattle. The very founding of America as a nation was based on war with the American Revolution, and America established its independence through the violence of war. These acts of violence, oppression, and war are the very DNA that created America. It's in our bones. And I think we see that DNA acting out today. The killing of 9 black lives while they met for worship, and yet invited a stranger into their midst who later killed. The burning of 7 black churches, way too many to be accidental. The aggression of white police forces against black neighborhoods. In 2009, there was an apology to the Native Americans that was passed by Congress and signed by Obama. But it was buried in an appropriations bill, and I wonder how many of us knew about it. The Washington Redskins, the NFL football team that refuses to change their name, even though the natives are offended, deeply offended, by the use of the name Redskins. Just because they're offended is good enough reason to change the name. The current animosity and spite towards immigrants, when reality is that we're all immigrants. The willingness to solve international issues through war and violence. In recent history, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, and so on. And our persistent belief in the myth of redemptive violence as the answer to problems. That there even is such a thing as redemptive violence. That we can solve difficult issues, and it's okay if the good wins. And as long as we do it quickly. The DNA of our beginnings continues to play out in our country today, again and again and again. But it doesn't have to. We pride ourselves on the progress of the civil rights movement, on equality. And even as Quakers, we take pride in what we have done. The Declaration of Independence, which says that all men are created equal. Yet 30 lines later, it refers to the Native Americans as merciless Indian savages. 9 days ago, the Supreme Court ruled that same-sex marriage was legal. And while many rise up in anger, they justify it as righteous anger. We must respond in love and grace, just as Jesus did. That's true no matter what we believe. And I think I'm particularly hurt by the evangelical church because that's the community I come from. And the anger that is expressed rather than Jesus' love and grace. How do we change? And if this is our DNA, can we change it? I say we need a stem cell transplant of our DNA. We give quilts for stem cell transplants, so we need a quilt for ourselves to do a stem cell transplant on America. A healing and transformation by God's grace. Christianity has long put the emphasis on personal conversion and transformation, that we are individually transformed by God's grace. And I think that all of us here have felt that kind of transformation, that this journey with God somehow has changed me, maybe in a way I can't define, maybe in a way that I don't always understand, but somehow I'm a better person for being here, for doing this journey with God, for asking the questions. But I am convinced that nations, communities, systems, empires, and organizations can all be changed. That this isn't just a personal reconciliation that God is doing in our world. 2 Corinthians 5 says that Christ is reconciling the world and has called us to be God's agents of reconciliation. As I've said before, that we have to start with telling the truth. George Erasmus is an Aboriginal leader from Canada, and he said, "Where common memory is lacking, where people do not share in the same past, there can be no real community. Where community is to be formed, common memory must be created." So somehow recognizing that we have to tell the truth, but it has to be a shared truth bearing witness to the truth of others. So those of us with white privilege cannot exclude Dove's truth, cannot exclude the truth of Native Americans, cannot exclude the truth of those who have been wounded by our past. We have to find a way to tell the truth that honors the truth of all people. After years of apartheid, South Africa brought healing through the Truth Commission. And I think we have to do the same. We begin by lamenting the atrocities that were done in our name, both to the natives in this country and to those kidnapped from Africa as slaves, to the generations held as slaves and families that were violently separated and sold into different plantations, into different areas, where they maybe never reconnected with family members. To immigrants, to Latinos, and those from all countries that have come here, felt marginalized, felt unsafe, particularly those that have come here without adequate visas, and yet they've come here seeking a place where they could be safe, a place where they could live and have a livelihood, and yet have been afraid to admit who they are, been afraid to be somewhere where they might be arrested and sent back and deported. For families that are ripped apart again. We lament the violence of war that was enacted against other countries, killing people on our behalf, on behalf of freedom. We lament the killing and the pain that was done, the torture that was done to people in our name. In December of 2014, after the depth of the torture was admitted, Jan was led to bring to us a minute which we affirmed in worship that reads as follows. The scope and reality of the United States torture of detainees is now clear and undeniable. We are anguished and humbly repent for the sins that were done on our behalf and in our name. Torture is wrong. It is a sin against God. It is a sin against humanity of those being tortured and those doing the torture. We ask forgiveness for our nation. We ask forgiveness for our nation, not only for the torture, but the other atrocities done in our name as well. And we commit to telling the truth for all peoples. We commit to telling both the good and the bad stories from our history. Whitewashing our story and cleaning it up, so to speak, hurts those who clean it up for their own benefit as much as it does those whom we deny in the changing of the story. Yes, we're all tempted to make history sound a little better than it really was, to paint ourselves in a good light. And yet we're diminished by that. We're diminished as much as we diminish each other. I've noticed that when we're confronted, our natural reactions are to defend ourselves rather than to hear what is being said and meet it with the honest truth. When someone confronts me, my instant thought is to defend why I said what I said or why I did what I did, rather than say, I hear you. That hurt you. You were troubled by that statement. I hear the pain. I'm bothered because I didn't think I was doing that. But I recognize now that was inappropriate. How can we find a way forward to be able to listen with authenticity and reality that honors the other rather than simply defending? John 8:32 says, you will know the truth and the truth will make you free. I used to see that simply as that we'll know the truth of who Christ is and that will set us free. But I think it goes beyond that. God can only work inside of truth. God is impotent to work inside of lies or half-truths or denial. And it's only as we lay the truth out on the table, the whole truth, only as we listen together in community and add the full truth that we can, as we know it, and invite even more to come as it is revealed to us, that God can truly work. And therein begins our journey to freedom. It seems to me that North Seattle Friends is called to reconciliation. And our journey begins with truth-telling. Our own stories, our individual stories, our collective stories as a community, our collective stories where our communities intersect one another, and we bring together a broader sense of the community because of our own individual connections outside of this particular location. Our connections because of our gender or our race or our history of who we are. We bring the fullness of those stories together. And with honoring one another and a commitment to listen deeply, we listen to each other. A willingness to hear the pain of another and not rush through it, to not shove it aside, not too quickly jump to, well, there's hope. It all turned out all right, didn't it? We hear that sometimes, where we shove it aside and the person feels discounted and unheard because we haven't listened deeply. A commitment to stay together and to walk with each other step by step, to not abandon each other in this process. A recognition that only together will we find the way forward that answers our hearts. As Quakers, we know that as we listen together, the full and more complete truth will come to us. But we need to listen together, and we all have to be faithful to bring our peace to the community as we listen together. I think that rather than a declaration of independence, maybe we should celebrate a declaration of interdependence, as we are interdependent upon each other. Let's wait in open worship. Listen first in silence and invite God to listen deeply with us, to speak to us. And then I invite us to share out of the silence how God has spoken to you this morning, what you've heard, that we might collectively listen and hear God's greater truth for us today. Let us wait.